is your place. This is where you'll serve America best. Your future's in the sky. You see, the way the Air Force Reserves feel about it, they're fighting and they're flying for the safety of our people at home, our mothers and fathers and our sisters and brothers. America will have overwhelming superiority in the air.
All right, welcome to Refuel Radio, episode number 7. This is Chief Mass Sergeant Darren Wiseman. I'm the Command Chief here at the 507th. And I actually have a special guest with me today hosting, which I'm really, really excited. His name is Colonel Brader, Deputy Commander. Welcome to the podcast, sir.
Well, thanks, Chief. Thanks for the invite. The formal invite went out about a week ago. And it took me about 7 days to accept.
Yeah, 7 days to accept and 2 minutes to prepare. And
2 minutes to prepare.
Well, you know, Colonel Gormley's not on this podcast hosting. And to be honest with you, you're in and he's out, right? And the reviews came in about his podcast capabilities. And out of the three listeners that we had, they didn't like his coffee preferences. And so, because he likes to froth it.
Yeah. You and I are black coffees only.
Yeah, you know what? You're the only officer I've met so far in the 507th that actually drinks like a real human being.
Right. Yeah. Black coffee, 50 cents is good enough.
Yeah. So that's probably due to the background that you have. So just quickly introduce yourself to the listeners, just about who you were, what airplane that you really fly or like to fly, and then we'll go from there.
That's well, thanks for the brief introduction, Chief. Yeah, Ryan Brader. I'm a Colorado kid. I'm a native from Colorado. I grew up born and raised skiing and doing all the things in the mountains that you can possibly do, and spent 12 years on active duty. Yeah. I'm a C-130 guy by trade, so I tell people I've never flown a new airplane in my entire life.
So the C-130, so I'm a ground guy. Get me straight on this. You like navigators? Question mark?
We're about to lose a like. I cannot stand navigators.
Every time we bring up the word navigator, for all those that are listening, all I hear is a
We can't stand navigators. There's a funny old C-130 joke that a cockpit in the C-130 is made up of two guys that should have washed out of pilot training and one that did.
Wait, for those that are, if we have navigators that are listening, which I'm not sure that we have any at all.
Not anymore.
But we do like you as a person.
Yeah, you're one step above an EWO.
Yeah. All right, sorry, continue.
Yeah, no,
C-130s.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never flown anything that was new, shiny, or had air conditioning. And the key to air power is really air conditioning. So I grew up flying all different variants of C-130s.
Yeah.
Came from the Colorado Reserve Unit, where I cut my teeth in the reserves for a number of years. Kind of got myself promoted out of a job there and ended up doing a joint job at NORAD NORTHCOM,
right
inside Cheyenne Mountain. That war room that everybody sees in all the movies, it really does look like that. Except on the knowledge wall, we have Monday Night Football instead of missile shots.
So I may be nerding out here, but I'm going to have to ask this question. You talked about Cheyenne Mountain. Stargate SG-1, does it exist or was it just a TV show?
That was just a TV show.
Okay. The other things you're not allowed to discuss because you did a non-disclosure agreement, right?
Okay. Exactly. Right.
Aliens do exist, everyone.
They do, right. Just not in Cheyenne.
Right. Probably not in the mountain. Okay. I get it. Yeah. Cool. Well, you know, that intro was really great. Colonel Gormley, if you're listening to this podcast, like I said, you're out. He's in.
So. Is it just because I'm taller?
Yeah, definitely in the seat anyway. I'm looking at you eye to eye now.
Yeah.
All right, well, great. Well, we have really great guests here today for this episode, and I'd like to introduce them real quick. We have Senior Airman Ivory White, correct?
Sir, yes, sir.
From the 72nd Aeroport Squadron?
Yes, sir.
All right. What's your guys' motto, by the way, in the 72nd? Is it like, we push pilots? Whoa. Sorry, that was a little security forces. Sorry.
Yeah, it's a big push. But I like to keep it universal, so we just keep it for the port dogs. Give me a port dog.
Oh, there we go.
Port
like
dogs.
That. Yeah. So anytime we hear the word port dog,
yeah.
So if it happens in the podcast, just I expect the right. I'm just kidding.
It's like Rangers lead the way. Yeah. All the way.
All the way. All the way.
All the way.
Yeah, and then we have Senior Airman Patrick Carlin.
Hey, how's it going?
Hey. From the 465th Air Refueling Squadron.
Yes, sir.
Right? The mighty refueling squadron.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and let's see here. What is your motto?
I think most of them are inappropriate. I don't really. I don't know.
That's funny. And mostly true.
Yeah. We'll have public affairs probably bleep out anything that you say from here on out.
Sure,
right? Exactly. It'll probably just be inappropriate.
It will be.
Okay, great. Thanks for the notice. We probably should have screened you before we did the podcast.
Yeah, but a little bit of vetting would have been good.
But we appreciate you on here. Yeah,
thanks for having me.
Couple of really great things before we ask for introductions. A couple of great things of these two airmen. Ivory. Do you go by Ivory, by the way?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. Because we'd like to keep it a little bit informal.
Absolutely.
You can call me Chief. And
Heavy D.
Yeah, Heavy D. You're our 507th Air Wing Airman of the Year.
Yes, sir.
So congratulations for 2024.
Thank you.
I would clap, but it'd probably be way too loud on the microphone. It's so sensitive. And we also have a OG Airman of the Year, Carlin.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah. You didn't know that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
awesome. Yeah, so that was cool. So that was awesome. So
thank you.
We've got some pretty awesome talent in the room, and then we have Colonel Brader and I.
So right. It's, right. Bringing in the leading from the rear.
Leading from the rear, always. Yeah.
Always.
I'm just supervising. Yeah.
Just supervising.
Just watching. Right. So, Ivory, give us a little bit about your background and some information about you.
Yes, sir. So, I am from Dallas, Texas, Oak Cliff. Specifically, I joined about 4 years ago, joined the Air Force Reserve. I'm an educator in my civilian career. I really enjoy that. That's my passion.
Yep.
One unique aspect is I'm an older senior airman. So I joined when I was about 33 years old. So I came in and going to basic with some young chaps. But it has been an amazing journey, and I look forward to what the Air Force has to present to me moving forward.
Yeah, I said you were 33. So were you 33 in basic training?
In basic.
Wow. So were you the dorm chief? Like,
how did you know, sir?
Well, because we always pick the old guy that's been gay. You know what I mean?
So, right.
Who was ever on Tylenol and been gay? That was the guy who was dorm chief.
I tried so hard to just go be an element leader and be underneath the radar. They said no.
Yeah.
You're not at your age. You're older than the TIs.
I was older than one of them. But actually, to my surprise, in my flight, we had individuals who were 40, 41, 39 years old.
So ouch.
But that was during COVID. So we know how that changed the perspective of our society during that time. But yeah, it was an amazing experience.
What was you probably remember a situation in basic then that you could probably share with our audience of three. What was the craziest story that you're legally allowed to tell on radio here about basic?
Okay,
that really shocked you.
In basic, contraband were those protein bars you used to have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and we had one trainee at the time. We still call trainees. One of my wingmen, he had somehow gathered about 15 to 20 of them, and he was kind of distributing them when it was time to go sleep.
Uh-oh.
So. One time I caught him and I was like, what's going on? Because one person gets in trouble, we all get in trouble.
Right, right.
And he was hiding them underneath his bed, like kind of tilted underneath where the pillow was. And it was, I was like, first of all, it was amazing because I don't know how he was getting caught on that. But catching him with those protein bars and trying to distribute them when he sleep, I mean, he must have been very hungry or something.
Yeah.
But,
and constipated, I assume that
yeah, a lot those of protein bars, yeah. Yeah.
Especially if you're one of the 40-year-olds.
So yeah, the 40-year-olds have a hard time, basically. But that was very unique to me, just how important small things like that was in that particular situation to individuals. It was a life-changing.
Humans are amazing, aren't they? I mean, they'll do anything to break the rules.
Like prison rules almost.
Prison rules. The intent to distribute. That's what I say as a former cop. even if it was protein bars.
Yeah, wow. Going to distribute those protein bars.
Wow,
that amazing guy. Amazing guy. Still my friend to this day.
Now, Ivory, as an educator, what age groups are you educating? What are you teaching?
So I'm high school, 9 through 12.
That's great.
And I've done middle school, so that's when they're right there going through the changes of life. I have never, because of my demeanor, I've never taught elementary. I just don't think my patience is good enough. And it's amazing because individuals professionally who I came across thought I was already in the military before I even joined because I just have this very stoic demeanor sometimes. It's like, just to the point.
And then you look the part.
I look the part. I look the part, sure. Right? And But those are the grade levels, and I really enjoy it. I've been doing it for a while now, and
yeah,
teaching students. And
you draw a lot of energy from them.
A lot.
Yeah,
it's a lot. That, it's a great keeps age. It keeps me young. You know, mm-hmm. you might look at me right now. You're like, you're how old?
Yeah, I was actually thinking that. I'm like, man, that guy is old.
I just get and a lot taller than me.
Yeah, well, everyone's taller than me.
Do you coach as well, or?
Yes, sir. I do coach. I don't coach anymore, but I coached for about 16 years.
That's great.
In Dallas, I coached at schools: Roosevelt High School, Kimball, Thomas Jefferson, and Gaston. A few schools. My major sports that I'm very good at, I like to say, is basketball and football.
That's great.
And that's where my passions were. And when I was an athlete, going to the school not too far from here called Langston University, had a lot of good experiences in that. So I really enjoyed it. So, but coaching is what really propelled me to go further in education, because I just, it wasn't work.
Sure.
You know, anything you're doing, it doesn't feel like it's an actual mm-hmm. job. You know, your passion for it is just that much more greater. So I really enjoy coaching.
I love that. I can't thank you enough for doing that, because the, you know, that age group nationally, globally, needs guys like that care and bring that kind of passion. It's probably, you know, we talk mentorship so much. It's probably not a bridge too far to say a lot of your mentors had nothing to do with the military. They're probably on the field of athletics or in a locker room somewhere in your mind. Do any of your mentors or guys maybe that you mentored stand out in your mind?
I have a few. I have a few, actually. My family is a family of coaches. One of my main mentors at this time is my dad. Kind of brought me into coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And we come from a long line of legacy of great coaches.
Yeah.
State championship coaches in the state of Texas.
And wow.
For the game of basketball. So my dad and his calm demeanor, but having a way to still get across his point, was something that really stood out to me. And it was great for me. But he still, to this day, I can call him right now and he can help me. Hey, Dad, I have this podcast today. What do you feel about it?
Yeah.
And he'll help me kind of, you know, from awesome. his perspective.
Cool.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes,
it's yeah, great. That's awesome.
That is great.
All right, Pat, you're up.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. Get ready. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Sure, yeah. I'm from, I was born and raised in South Carolina, and then moved to Florida when I was about 11, grew up there, and I definitely identify more with the Florida boy side of me.
Yeah, okay.
So. Your accent sounds like it.
So yeah, I grew up and did a lot of flying kind of when I was younger. Dad was a pilot and found out that's really what I wanted to do. And
yeah.
So I was able to, you know, I was homeschooled growing up, so I had a lot of time to focus on the extracurricular side of flying and whatnot. And then my brother came out here 3 years before I did as a boom operator. And then I magically wound up here, got interviewed and joined up. So so now we're here.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So what kind of, was it just by sure chance, happenstance that you got, you know, selected here or joined the reserve here? Or?
So my brother, he interviewed at another unit and it turned out to be kind of a gentleman's club. They weren't doing off the street guys out of high school.
Okay.
And then my dad went through UPT with a guy that was still here as an Okie, as a pilot.
Okay.
So that was the kind of the connection that got us over here to this unit.
Yeah.
And turned out, you know, hey, look, we are looking for a boom operator. So he came out, interviewed, and was out here for, you know, 3 years or so, and figured out, oh my gosh, this is kind of the way to get into aviation on the military side. This is a pretty good opportunity and kind of leading into the pilot side. And I came out here when I was about 18 years old and interviewed and found out, I just fell in love with the place, really.
Yeah.
It's incredible, you know, great unit. And so I love it. Been doing it for almost 4 years now.
Yeah. You got any hobbies, anything like that? I know you read a lot. At least I saw you on the back of the jet reading a ton.
Oh, don't lie about me now. Come on.
We can't talk about what he was reading.
Boom operators read?
Yeah, I don't know about that one.
You have a crayon in his hand?
Yeah.
Well, I had the true blessing of coming into an airplane here. My brother and I bought one, so that's kind of been taking up a lot of my time and my financial contributions. So
yeah.
Going out and doing that as a hobby. I've been working with the EAA, Experimental Aircraft Association, and you know, getting people flying and learning a lot about experimental aircraft and whatnot. And I have a few other little project cars and whatnot that I work on. That also take up my bank account.
Right. Yeah, you know the old saying, Pat. You know how you become a millionaire? Be a billionaire and buy an airplane.
Oh, is that, yeah. So don't come to me for financial advice, please. I probably won't be.
Oh, you'll be a great pilot.
Yeah. Never ask a pilot.
You're going to have to scratch that question off.
Exactly.
Financial advice.
Yeah, we're not going to ask that tonight. That's good. Tell me what motivates you. Like, what's the thing that kind of drives you? Is it flying? Is it
Sure, yeah.
Reading, obviously not.
Not reading, unless it's about airplanes. No, it really is aviation. I love it. Yeah. I mean, it was a true blessing to kind of find that calling at a young age. And so everything, you know, being homeschooled, being able to focus and have, you know, my two biggest mentors, which is my mom and my dad.
Yeah.
You know, mom was the teacher and dad was kind of the driver.
Theme here today.
Of getting us flying and whatnot. Really were able to kind of hone in on, okay, what's going to set you up for success to be a pilot for X amount of years. So really it's just that motivation of if you're getting paid to do something, you know, and it feels like a hobby, then you found what it is that you want to
never go to work.
So exactly. Yeah. So sure. Working towards that, and I do feel it is flying. That's kind of the motivation.
That's a really great principle for our listeners to really take away from, because life really is short.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Find that passion and run fast after it.
Sure.
Right. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty awesome. All right, Ivory, what about you? What motivates you?
The aspect of achievement.
Yeah.
So that's actually one of the core values of my fraternity. I'm a part of a fraternity called Kappa Alpha Psi Fraternity Incorporated.
Nice.
I have to put that in there.
Yeah.
But
do they have a chant, by the way?
We have a few.
But do you have a few? Okay. Nothing for the radio?
Nothing for the radio.
If you're in the fraternity and like this podcast, we'd like to remind you to please subscribe to our podcast.
But no, it's achievement. You know, I believe in the next goal.
Right.
You do have to have some certain amount of availability to settle where you are.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's the next thing. So it can be educational, it can be career, it can be with your family. Mm-hmm. But achievements, just like you said, there's only one life we have here. And then the other aspect on the other side of that coin is persevering. So when you have those goals that you're trying to set, you're trying to get into that, get that aircraft going. If we're trying to get this aircraft loaded and it's not necessarily going to go the way we want it to go. But can we persevere and still get the mission completed?
Right.
So those two things, I think, kind of always push me and motivate me day to day, not just in the military side, but just in my everyday life.
Yeah.
That's such a great segue almost to the next topic of missions.
Yeah.
You know, we're all military members, and probably one of the greatest differences in a podcast of folks that are outside the uniform versus folks that are inside the uniform is our mission orientation and kind of focus on the mm-hmm. mission. And I say that with a capital M, right? The mission, the mish. You guys have deployed, and I think we always attach mission with deployments because that's kind of where the rubber meets the road. Is there any kind of, you know, from your first deployment? I get you did one just recently.
Yes, sir.
Did you have any big takeaways from that, you know, at the age of 33 plus years of age now, it's kind of an aha moment, like, oh, now I get it.
In all honesty, and I've shared this before, deployment was probably one of the better things for me as a military member, mm-hmm. as a reservist.
Right.
Because it's one thing from going and doing your job and learning your job 1 weekend out of the month. But mm-hmm. when you're doing it every day and you're having to be forced to learn these certain tools and resources you have to use and things of that nature, it was a great experience for me. My wingman, shout out to Technical Sergeant Stevens. We went to Kuwait together, and we went to a section of our job, AFSC. We had two T2s, aerial porters again, but we went to a
or dogs. Oh,
there you go.
See, there it was.
It was perfect, Chief.
It was the moment.
Perfect. But we went into that, and we had a certain level of intelligence within that expertise within that field. But when we were forced to do it every day, and we had to overcome certain things, along with my other wingman, Sergeant Thompson. We did a great job.
Yeah.
Shout out to Master Sergeant Jones and everyone who was over there. We had to accomplish that mission with the big M, and learning your job and your expertise from day to day. I look at active duty members differently. You know, mm-hmm. It's different respect. I mean, we're all trying to accomplish the goal, but when you have that every day waking up, this is what I have to learn, this is what I have to do. It made me be more proficient in my job.
Yeah.
And being over there overseas doing that was great. So, you know, now when I came back, I had to kind of reset, but it was an amazing experience, and I really enjoyed the deployment. And I probably would do another one if the opportunity arises.
Yeah, so let's go from the ground to the air. You've deployed, right?
I have, Pat? Yes, sir, yeah.
All right, so same question that Colonel Brader had asked.
Yeah, I mean, you really learn your proficiency out there.
It is.
Flying a lot, you know, kind of our tempo over the last few times has been two on, one off, three on, one off, flying, you know, anywhere between 6 and 8 hours per flight, So a lot of that is drone time, you know, just burning holes in the sky.
Yeah.
But you really, you know, as you're flying that much, a lot of stuff starts to go wrong with airplanes, you know, as they're flying a lot so much. So you really kind of become associated with the airplane,
right,
and start to figure it out. You start to really figure out the mission. Everything starts to flow together. It eventually kind of turns into Groundhog Day, but then you have one of those real crew resource management flights where everything seems to go against you
that night.
And you get pretty proficient at it.
Yeah.
Definitely starts to drive you a little crazy sometimes, but it is, I do really enjoy it, going out there and flying that much.
Where were you stationed?
We did IUD.
The Dirty Deed.
Dirty Deed.
Jim Tanpool.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. And
today's podcast, episode 7, is brought to you by Jim Tanpool. Also, the Ali Asaleem Chicken Bacon Ranch Wraps.
Oh, that's amazing.
Right?
Those were amazing.
Yeah, so we talk about, you know, the formal side of deployment, right, and the mission, and we love it. But come on, guys, there are some deployment stories here, right? Mm-hmm. I know that they always say when you're deployed, the stories stay while deployed. But there's probably something G-rated, if you will, that you can probably share with us that was real fun or was kind of like an insane story that happened.
You've got 2E4 sitting right here.
we have a few things.
Yeah, if you feel comfortable enough, you know, to share.
Strategically transporting equipment to alternate locations or something along those lines. Right. The acronym.
I think one thing that really stood out to me, staying out there and being E4, was the living conditions. It was it was tough. It was tough. And I remember a few times when the electricity is going off and the AC is going off in 130 degree weather, almost every week, and you're on 12-hour shifts, that was tough. The living conditions and that heat really stood out to me a lot. It was tough.
Before we get to you, Pat, I mean, we could tie this together. So now you have your high school students. And life is really tough when their cell phone is down below 50% on the battery charge.
Right.
And maybe they only have one bar, right?
Right.
You're like, no, youngster, that life is not tough.
Nah,
let me tell you about some tough times, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. 135 is the highest I think I saw it out there.
Yeah, your feet or your shoes melt to the...
It was tough.
The rock. It's not even pavement. It's just rock.
Yeah.
I thought I was a tough guy. You know, I tried to go running out, with my shirt off and... No, I don't do it anymore. I did it one time.
Right. You tried to do a Top Gun moment. So he's like, run.
I did.
Run while the guns out.
I did. But yeah, that heat and that power going off was
tough. End of days.
Yeah,
I burn easily in the sun. And so if I took my shirt off, even in, Northern England, I'd still get pretty burned. So I don't think I have an opportunity of ever doing that in my life.
The Irish in you?
Yeah. The last time I took my shirt off, you and I were actually doing snow angels.
Right. And PA blurbed us out.
Yeah. On particular parts of our front chest area.
Right.
Yeah.
When did that become a thing?
I don't know. But it keeps popping up on some social media feeds. And so I'm not really sure. Kind of embarrassing.
All three of our
subscribers.
That's probably
the last time I took my shirt off. Yeah. Any other deployment stories, Pat, that you can share?
Some of them that I can't share.
Because some of the crew's like probably listening right now like, what?
You can self-incriminate. it won't leave this office.
Probably the best moment was they had those Crystal Light packets over there.
Okay.
Those 145 milligram caffeine packets. And our kind of way of getting back at them was every day you'd go and take a handful of them.
Yeah.
And every day the trash bag in my room got more full and more full and more full. And I came back with a 50-gallon trash bag filled with those little packets. And it was also good because the entire IUD DFAC system was lacking in Crystal Lights by the time we left there. There was a shortage going on.
That showed them.
But now the 465th Air Refueling Squadron has an abundance of Crystal Light packets.
Crystal Light.
And everywhere you go, everyone's got a little red bottle of water.
See, I'm going to go back to your basic training story of that guy who squirreled away all these protein bars. He had something going with him, actually. Now we got you, Pat, squirreling away Crystal Light packets.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, we do not sponsor Crystal Light at all.
Right.
They're just packets and donated for deployment. Well, good. So let's talk about mentorship real quick. Do you even care about mentorship? I mean, honestly, like open talk, do you think it's important from a formal perspective? Do you like it? Do you receive it well? Or do you like it more informal? So I'll start with you, Pat. Like, When you hear the word mentorship, how do you see that?
Definitely in the aviation world, you get a lot of mentorship, whether it's whether it's wanted or not.
Yeah.
You get it.
Right.
And there is definitely a difference between formal and informal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every time we fly, there is always a lot of formal mentorship that you get, whether it's from an instructor or somebody that just has a little bit more skin in the game than you. And it's always pretty important to be open to that. Mm-hmm. And the common saying is always, it's a way, not the way.
Mm-hmm.
But that's kind of how you learn more and more about, oh, this is a better way to do this part. Make sure it's legal, but right. also do it. Everybody over there in ops, everybody in this wing, you know, has experience doing something. This is kind of the beauty of the reserves is everybody has experience in the outside world. Right. They always bring it in
right.
here.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was an off-the-street guy, so I didn't have any active duty time or anything like that. Which coming here, it was just a total drinking through a fire hose.
Yeah.
Because mm-hmm. you've got guys that we just, Chief Master Sergeant Robinson just retired 37 years wow. as a boom operator.
Right.
You know, how many stories does that guy have? How many hours does he have?
Yeah.
You're always going to learn something from him.
Mm-hmm.
And we have so many characters like that on both the boom and the pilot side that can just blow your socks off with
right.
how much they know about the mission, the airplane, just anything in life that you're dealing with. If you've got problems with, oh, my car is making this noise, somebody in this wing knows how to fix exactly what problem right. you're having and can help you kind of get going. Mm-hmm. And so for the young guys like myself, it's huge. It's huge.
Yeah, it's massive. Yeah. I've always thought over the course of my career, especially once I got in the reserves, because you brought up a great point. We bring the outside world. We try and bridge the two to our world in uniform. We're not that great at mentoring, I think, inside the uniform, because I do think sometimes we almost over-formalize it.
Right.
And Ivory, I think you could speak to it a lot, because in our civilian lives, you really kind of learn how mentorship works. And oftentimes, the silent mentor, right, the informal, like a coach or a dad or something like that. And I think that is what, as guardsmen or reservists, we can bring to the fight, is that that outside mentorship, and kind of how to really do it if you're really trying to achieve success, you know, achieve a goal, mm-hmm. an end goal. You probably have a bunch of mentors. If I throw that name out, your dad popped in your head and yeah. probably coach so-and-so and maybe a trainer here and there or something like that. Can yeah. you speak to any of those?
I mean, so for the military side, I do have a few. I've been blessed to have a few. Some of those are not necessarily from my unit or in right now, but I do have individuals who are in the military. But speaking more towards the civilian side, you have those coaches, mm-hmm. you have those individuals who are in your career field in education, who are in higher positions, who know where you're trying to go. And I right. feel like individuals who take a liking to you because they see something in you is something that's very important. I have individuals that are in my unit now, like they see that, hey, Aaron White, you know, he is a older, younger Aaron.
yeah,
you know,
right.
But I can see that he has goals and ambition, and we're going to try to, you know, help him achieve those.
Mm-hmm.
And to be a mentor, to be an individual who's open and able to see that is very big. But it does kind of get overshadowed in the military side. It's a little bit more simplistic, I believe, in mm-hmm. the civilian side, because we're a little bit more personable.
Mm-hmm.
When we put on these uniforms, it seems like it's a little difficult. But in the civilian side, you can see that young man, that young lady, what are they maybe dealing with? Or
mm-hmm.
you can relate to some of the things that they may be dealing right. with. And
good
that,
work.
That relation aspect is something that I believe we can improve on
mm-hmm.
inside the uniform just a little bit more better. But mentorship is very important, especially for a porter. You know, I didn't know how to tie down chains necessarily. I didn't know how to do the paperwork side. So there was individuals who came in and, you know, helped me and still help me to this day, even this morning. You know, it was,
right.
I really enjoy the aspect of mentorship and being a mentor mm-hmm. Myself. So
yeah, I can see that. And that is, you know, you can't really pick it up off of a podcast, but it is believable. Like, you are believable the way you carry yourself, and you carry yourself like a high school basketball or football coach, you know, from the hotbed of both down there in Texas. And I think as reservists, that's what we bring to the fight. And you mentioned, you know, 10, 20 minutes ago, being downrange and really kind of admiring the active duty counterparts, our mm-hmm. regular Air Force counterparts. Mm-hmm. One thing they don't really get that experience in is that the civilian side, and bringing in that mentorship or that guidance, or, and like you say, being relatable.
Relatable
is huge.
Yeah, so you guys are both wearing the rank of senior airman, right? And obviously the next step is staff sergeant, right? Where you'll start kind of getting now into the non-commissioned officer roles. So you're really at the top of your game, if you will, as an what I would call a formal airman, right? So what is a piece of advice you'd like to offer someone who's just starting out, right? We've got one stripers roaming around the wing, probably those that are listening, you know what I mean? In the reserve command, we may have some two stripers. We have some no stripers too. So we'll start with you, Pat. What do you think? You got a piece of advice you'd like to offer someone?
Well, I mean, it's kind of funny. I mean, especially kind of, I've been there before, you know, showing up with zero experience in something, and you kind of just roam around like a chicken with your head cut off or whatnot. But the secret is carry around a clipboard and you'll look like you're doing something.
Tip number one.
I think it's just treat everything like you're a sponge, you know, absorb everything that you can, because it comes faster than you think. You know, the fact that you're going to be running a team or being in charge of something, or you know, handling a lot of money worth of assets,
right,
being in charge of people, it comes a lot faster than you really think. And so getting that proficiency up as fast as you can, you know, definitely treat everything like it's a lesson.
What about you, White?
For me, I believe I would tell the individuals to remember or know your why. Why did you specifically choose this AFSC? Why did you join the Air Force? Why is this mission important? Why or what am I doing at this specific time that's going to expand upon the greater mission of the Air Force? And just remembering that, personalizing it, and then taking it on to the larger team, I think would be something I would tell them, the why. Remember your why.
Yeah, mentorship, learning together, growing together. I mean, it's just part of the journey, right? I will suggest that it is, I think, and hopefully you guys agree, but I think that it's important to also get out of your comfort zone of your own squadron, right? And meet others in other units.
Yeah.
Understand where they're coming from, what they're about. I was just talking to some folks today in our top three, you know, ranks, senior master sergeant, master sergeant chief, right? And just kind of made the note of seek to understand, then to be understood. And because there were some, you know, concerns about certain agencies, you know, not doing certain jobs that they're supposed to potentially, and how they can, you know, does the wing have a strategic plan to help with that, right? And the only answer I had for them was seek to understand first, because we're human beings. We have our life experiences, and it's really, really important, especially you talked about the mentorship. There's a personal aspect to it on the civilian side for you, you know. White there. So I think it's really, really important. Once you get to know somebody and empathize and put yourself in their shoes, it's a lot better, right? We're growing a little bit better. We're mentoring a little bit better, right? We're absorbing things. I mean, even me at the end of my career, I'm still absorbing some things. You know what I mean? Listening to you guys, realizing, oh yeah, I need to sharpen that a little bit better. What other advice, things that you've learned in your life up to this point, whether it's military or civilian, you know, folks that are listening, you know, that either could be about resiliency, you know, maybe they're going through a problem right now. Maybe they just want to be coached, right? Or they're at the senior airman level and they're just like, I don't know what to do with myself. I want to get out. Because you guys are at 4 years, Carlin?
Yes, sir. Yep, this month.
White, were you at 4 years?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so you guys are at 4 years. Technically, either right near 2 years from the end of an enlistment, or maybe at the end of an enlistment could be someone. So what would be something encouraging that comes to your mind?
I think planning ahead, so knowing what your next move is going to be. If you're coming into, if you're just freshly into the military aspect, okay, what do I want to get? What do I want to gain out of this experience? If I'm towards the end of my career, do I feel like I have fulfilled all of my goals, or I've done everything I want to do out of the military? So just kind of prioritizing the next goal, I think, is the next thing for me. That's the type of individual that I am. Right now I'm in school for my doctoral.
Yeah,
so like
that's great.
It's like what's the next move? What's the next thing I'm going to do?
Administrative maybe. Yeah. And in civilian life.
Yes, sir.
Principal.
Exactly.
Yep.
I got
superintendent.
I can see it. Like, you look like one.
Yeah. Thank you.
But I spend plenty of time in the principal's office. That's how I am.
But yes, I would just know what your next goal is, and you know, taking the experiences that you have had, speaking more so towards the military, and then in your personal life as well. And then that next goal, start working towards that, whatever it may be.
That's great.
Yeah, it's funny that you asked that question, because I have a friend of mine that he was an enlisted aviator, and you know, his first state place that he was stationed at, his first airplane, didn't really work out too well for him, and then he transitioned to a different airplane, a different position, still as an enlisted aviator, and it kind of worked out the same, where he just wasn't happy with how much he was flying, where he was going, his career progression and whatnot. And I was talking to him, and he said, I'm just going to get out, you know, and go to school, which that's fine. You know, absolutely. Go better yourself. Go to school. Do, you know, do great.
Right.
But, you know, how many people do we know that are in the reserves right now that always say, I didn't even know the reserves was a thing until I came, mm-hmm. got brought into it. And, you know, if knowing his position, I really wish that, you know, I could just expose him to the kind of life that we live here uh-huh. on this side. Cause hey man, staying in is always an option mm-hmm. and, you know, getting the benefits of staying in as well, mm-hmm. getting to travel, changing a job, you know, whatnot. Definitely always look at all the options that are available and talk to as many people as you can, make as many friends as you can, and call in all the contacts that you have whenever you're getting ready to make a big, big move in life, yeah. such as either getting out of the military and going straight civilian or you know, staying in the military, re-upping on your contract and or moving AFSCs in the Air Force. Sure.
Yeah. So, Colonel Brader, you're kind of coming at it, obviously, from many years of service, kind of based on that same question. I mean, what are your kind of thoughts on that when it, in regards to, you know, someone who's right at the cusp of their first term, right? That sure. may be kind of on the fence of, do I jump in for a second term? Which, just for the listener's sake, we have a retention problem, you know what I mean, within right. the DOD, but definitely in the Air Force and Air Force Reserve. And so we're always looking for ways or advice, like what is it, you know what I mean, that we can do to maybe show you that this is an important tool based on the goals that you have.
Yeah, that's such a good. It's almost a softball question, Chief, because sure. sitting in here is a bunch of Okies.
Yeah,
and I always think you got to play to your strength. Mm-hmm. Your enemy's always going to try. If you're righty, they're going to try and take away your right hand, make you beat them left handed. Well, our strength is being the Okies,
right?
And it's believable, right? Mm-hmm. Like Ivory's believable. Like he'll be a principal one day. I have no doubt. And I just think we got to lean on our strength. And our strength is being an Okie, being a family. And that kind of thing. And if you're on the fence or all you got to do is talk to somebody who did reenlist.
Right.
And what are they going to say? What are you going to say at your retirement in June? It's about the people.
Right.
And I think therein lies our strength. And not every unit is like that. It's not lost upon me that the other units don't necessarily have that. Or if they do, it's more of a cliche. Mm-hmm. You know, but for us, it's believable. We do really care about each other. And we travel to the ends of the earth to help one another. And so if you're on that fence post, you kind of look in the mirror and you're like, where am I headed? And am I headed somewhere where people are any better than what we have here, mm-hmm. the salt of the earth?
Yeah, I've learned a couple of things in my career as I was kind of progressing through the ranks. And I didn't really notice this until I was a staff sergeant. And it's two things. Ask a lot of questions, right? Mm-hmm. Because that helps you to kind of digest who you are as a person, what goals you have, you know, things that interest you, things that make you happy, right? So it can kind of start formulating an idea of where you want to go, kind of what you were saying, Ivory, mm-hmm. you know, having that next thing. Mm-hmm. So asking a lot of questions and then communicating often about what right. where you want to be at. So as an example, when I was a staff sergeant, I came into the reserves and I realized I want to be a command chief, right? So I would just start telling folks, you know what I mean? I want to be a command chief. I want to be a command chief, right? And 100% of the time, people in leadership positions want to break down barriers and help you get there as much mm-hmm. as they have okay. control to, mm-hmm. right? Whether it's either offer advice, hey, you want to do that? In order to be a command chief, we want to put you over here so that way you get some exposure because you don't want to be a lame command chief, right? So it's just understanding kind of where you're at. And not everything, like in the sense of if someone's listening or you guys, you don't want to be command chief, that's not wrong. It's just that was my goal, right? And so it was the mentorship and the leadership and the friends that I had around me were helping me figure that out to get there. Pat, I heard that... you did pretty awesome on your pilot's test.
Oh.
Or was it a pilot's test?
Yeah, AFOQT in the pilot section.
AFOQT.
Yeah.
What was the score like? Something abnormal.
Well, I got a 99 on it.
Okay, wow. Is that investigatable, wow. meaning it could be cheating?
I hope not.
Because that's pretty high. I mean, I assume 100
I hope
is,
not. Because
I'm not. Yeah. OSI's on the line. They're like, oh, hang on. Pat Carlin, gotcha here.
As long as OSI hits subscribe at the bottom of your podcast.
Exactly.
But you have probably, I mean, you have a real clear goal on what you want to do, right?
Sure.
And that's fly.
Sure. Yes,
right?
Sir, yeah.
I assume maybe fly for the Air Force?
Yes, sir. Yep. Hopefully right here with the Okies.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so as you communicate that, I mean, I would assume you'll find strength then as the team surrounds you and elevates you towards that goal.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. It's been, I mean, they kind of knew that's what I wanted to do. Even in my interview, they were, you know, why would you want to start off as a boom operator and not just go straight in as a pilot? And, you know, we had our reasons and it turned out to work out pretty well because of all the experience I've gotten here.
Thank goodness you didn't go through navigating.
It seemed like ever since I showed back up at the unit, everyone has been asking, when are you done? Yeah. When are you done with your stuff? And it's been, I'm still working on my degree. Degree's finished. When are you done? AFOQT's next. Mm-hmm. That's done. What's next? TBAS. When is that done?
Yeah.
You know, everyone's just
pushing.
Where's that? So that's been fantastic, is knowing amazing. You know, people actually are hoping and helping for my success.
Yeah.
And we'll see here. Board's in June, so I need letters of recommendation. Yeah.
We'll see how the podcast goes. Exactly. I don't know. TBD.
Hit subscribe and comment. Hire Patrick.
Yeah. Hire Patrick. Yeah. But I will offer this other suggestion too, is when someone decides kind of sort of the target, then go beyond that.
True.
Right? Go to the unexpected. So why can't you, as an example, be president of the United States? That shouldn't be out of the realm of possibility, right? You may not get there. There's a lot of things that have to happen in line and so forth, but there's no reason why you can't start thinking that direction and pointing your boat, pointing your airplane, right, or whatever it is, on that trajectory, and start telling people, and then carry the bags of the person in that journey that's already 10 steps ahead of you, right? And you guys know what I mean by carrying the bags, is just watching everything they do, getting that mentorship. So if I wanted to run for president, as an example, guess what? I need to find a congressman to go start carrying their bags for. So I can learn the ropes. I can understand what's going on, what's important to people in society. It's the same thing with command chief. You know, if you're sitting here as a senior airman, like, man, that's what I want. Then start working with some command chiefs, right? Understanding what that complexity is, because it can be a lot. Right, so that helps you decide: is that really where I want to go?
Right.
You know, but don't stop at being a pilot; be a wing commander.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. Why not?
Yeah.
But it starts now. It really does. So, just want to offer. I didn't mean to go on a diatribe on the.
No, I'm in awe
on this podcast.
That's really good.
But I have very few podcasts left. I have 13 days left in uniform, so I guess I'm just vomiting at the mouth here. All right, well, one thing as we start to close, Wyatt, you said that you are a teacher at a school, right?
Yes, sir.
So what's the name of the school?
It's Kathleen Joy Gilliam Collegiate Academy in Dallas.
In Dallas, Texas, okay. You guys have a motto.
We don't. We do not have.
Do you have a mascot?
We have no sport.
You don't have any sports?
It's I don't like it.
That's why he's coach of the year.
When I went to Gilliam, that's when I stopped coaching. But I do more of the professional stuff and stuff like that.
Sure.
But we're the Stars.
Yep. The Stars. Yeah. Oh, so kind of like the Dallas Stars hockey team.
Yeah.
Without a team.
Kind of like the Dallas Cowboys is the Stars.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, but they can't.
Stars.
Yeah.
Do you have a band?
No band. Okay. Our students, they come strictly for academics.
That's great.
But they can do extracurricular activities at their home school.
Got it. Okay. Well, shout out to that school and the students.
Shout out to Gilliam.
No. Hopefully they'll come in and listen on all the platforms that we have you know, for this podcast, and at least listen to you. They can be entertained by the rest of us, I guess, here, because they don't know us.
That's great.
Well, awesome. Well, this was a pleasure to have you two on here. You guys are obviously at the top of your game, in my opinion, here at this wing, at your level. I see a lot of greatness, not just goodness, but greatness happening in your careers. You know, hopefully I'll be able to kind of keep track of what's happening here, you know, in Oklahoma and at the Okies. But sky's the limit for you two.
Yeah.
Right. Sure. And again, congratulations on winning those awards. Makes you kind of a big deal around here. Yeah. Big deal.
Right. Real big deal.
That's how they say it in Florida.
That's right.
kind of a big deal.
I'm guessing it's panhandle, not.
Yeah, Southern. That's further north.
Oh, is that? Oh, sorry, my bad. Florabama.
Florabama.
<We're different. laughs>
All right.
I'll tell you, you know, I'd be lying to you if I didn't tell you I was a little bit nervous about doing a podcast when they asked me if I'd do it. And then I looked at the lineup and I thought, holy cats. This is going to be one of those humbling events, and you guys don't disappoint.
I think it's hard to everybody. If I ask 20 people to identify or define a leader, you get 20 different answers. But I'll tell you, when a couple leaders like you walk in the room, you just know it.
Yeah.
How to put it in words is darn hard. But looking at you guys, it's humbling, and I'm proud to be sitting at the table with you today. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Awesome. Thank you. So we're wrapping up. Episode 7's closed. Colonel Brader, you did a great job.
Thanks, Chief.
Yeah. Colonel Gormley, you're out.
I'm in.
You're the best deputy commander that we have currently.
Right, you know? Right.
One of one. Right.
I'm the denominator.
Well, it's really great to have you. So I can't wait to hear you back on the podcast. Hopefully, very soon.
If I get invited back, it'd be great, Chief.
You know, it all depends on the reviews of this one.
Right.
Yeah.
Please hit subscribe.
Yeah. Excellent. All right. Well, that's a wrap. To all the listeners, bye.
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 Fighting today and tomorrow and the next day until we win.